Hi, welcome to the UCB Long Form Conversations. I almost forgot the name of the podcast.
You did great.
Thank you. I'm John Frusciante.
I'm Will Hines.
Hi, Will. How are you? Back with us this week. How was your directing gig last week?
It was really fun. Video will come out in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. We have intern Cypher Sounds with us, as always.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
And then also intern Keaton.
Intern
Keaton. And also intern Semra.
No, or, she's Cypher's assistant.
She's Cypher's, okay.
But she's from the other world. But I had car trouble, so she had to come with me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well,
she's from the music world. Sorry.
I see.
Cypher runs a Fortune 500 company, and he's also our intern.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest today is Brandon Scott Jones. Hello, Brandon.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the show.
Yep.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fresh from Guy Fieri's, yes. What is it?
I got American Grill. American Kitchen. Guy Fieri's.
What are you guys talking about?
Brandon had lunch there.
Yeah, I had lunch at Guy Fieri's American Kitchen. They got that New York Times.
Times ripped it apart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rightfully so. Oh, is that bad to say? I don't know.
He does listen.
He might. Mm-hmm. No, I'm feeling a little filled with Guy American nachos and awesome pretzel chicken tenders. I don't know what it means. And then fries with donkey sauce. So
what is donkey sauce?
Mayonnaise. Surprise, everybody. Yeah, yeah. Mayonnaise with maybe some black pepper in there.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah.
And
good
a nice little
for me.
Margarita to start your afternoon off. It was like noon.
Hey, you're an artist.
I know.
You can't be expected to live by the bounds of society.
Exactly. Also, you have to absorb all experiences as an artist.
You're not doing it right if you don't get a little tanked at noon at that place.
Yeah. My therapist has her opinions too, but I agree with you guys.
Great things to get out early in any podcast. Yeah. Seeing a therapist
and you're a little
drunk at noon.
And I drank at noon. Yeah. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. This is an authentic conversation with me.
Yeah. I also want to get out of the way just for anyone who listened to last week's podcast. My personal love language is quality time. This week. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you take the quiz online?
Yeah, Keaton is nodding his head enthusiastically. His is quality time as well.
This is in relation to Morgan Jarrett's podcast where she talked about love languages. Mm-hmm. Did you take the quiz on the website
take the
she
quiz.
Recommended?
Yes, 5lovelanguages or whatever.com. Yeah. Yeah. Did you took it too, Cyber.
Yeah.
What was
Mine
yours?
Mine is words of affirmation.
Okay, words of affirmation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you taken the love language?
I did take it.
What is
your
love
language? Quality time as well.
Quality time. Wow. That's great. Yeah. So, Will, you have to take the test too.
I assume mine would be list of media over email, but I'll check. I haven't seen the website yet.
That is one of them. That is one of the 5 love languages.
Okay, well, we'll see.
Okay. Yeah. So, Brandon Scott Jones.
Yes.
Who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah.
Let's see. I am a human man.
Okay.
Living in Brooklyn, New York.
All right.
I perform here at the theater.
In which grouping?
In the grouping of on Friday nights, I'm part of Stone Cold Fox, a sketch group.
That's right.
I also, on Friday nights at the UCB East, I do Gentrify, which is like a stand-up variety show.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday nights, I do improv with Grandma's Ashes.
That's right.
At the Chelsea Theater.
Longtime hosts of The Jam. Recently passed the torch to Guthrie. We'll talk about that, I'm sure.
That's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is great.
Second consecutive Grandma's Ashes podcast guest.
Yes. Now that you mention it, you're right. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the love. And let's see, I've done some bunch of running sketch shows here.
Yeah, I've done a lot of running shows in theater and stuff like that.
Yeah, right? I bartend on stage during ladies' night.
And oh, just, right.
And
you're the hunky bartender.
I'm the hunky bartender, which each time gets a little more weird every time they introduce me as such.
Okay.
Because I'm wearing just a hoodie and And I, let's see, and I do, yeah, I do some, I feel, I tour and I teach.
Great.
So you're all over this place.
More so than I ever thought I would be.
I'm going to ask you, instead of starting in the beginning, I'm going to sort of skip to the middle.
Please.
If that's okay with you, Will.
It's a narrative, bold leap, but I support it.
Work right. for Quentin Tarantino.
This
so hold
is
on to your
hats
here. I'm going to ask you sort of a larger question immediately.
Please.
You have, in the past couple of years, I think, become sort of very well known around the theater and gotten more involved in a lot of things. And your sort of reputation and your cachet as a comedic performer has risen in the past couple of years.
Thank you.
To the point where you have done a lot more stuff and you're sort of everywhere. Is there something that you would? What has your work ethic been leading up to that? What do you think you'd attribute that to?
Oh wow, that's my work ethic. I feel like probably like everybody, I feel like, you know, I'm just not working hard enough. Mm-hmm. And I certainly feed into that sometimes, yeah, where I just like sit at home and I'm like, I could be writing right now, but instead I'll just watch the entire first season of Enlightened or something like that. I think when it came to improv, I really remember a time where it was around 2008 or so, and John, you were coaching a team that I was on, and I really
this
just
was, you can't we can't all live in a cave.
We can't live in a cave. Yeah,
that's a terrific name.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it was you, Benjamin Apple, that, right? Yeah. Dan Chamberlain.
Every time we do this, we leave somebody out.
I'm going to leave a ton of people out because I've forgotten.
Rory Covey.
Rory Covey.
Yeah. Danaher Dempsey, Jason Jacowski, Richard Grebonier, and. Oh no, I'm forgetting Tony Canty.
That's
Tony
Canty,
who named
yeah.
it. Who mm-hmm. named? He's the guy that came.
That's
up
a very
with
Tony Canty name.
Very, mm-hmm. very.
That's
Tony.
A ridiculous man.
Insane.
I don't think he's got. I don't think he ever remembers. He's like Memento. I don't think he remembers what happened 30 seconds before him at any point in his life.
Yeah, he's amazing.
But he's a hilarious dude.
Wonderful guy. Went to his wedding, which was great. And he lives right near me, and so we see each other on the train platform a lot. And
he smiles all the time.
He's
right?
a smiley man. He's just great.
It's big. Big open eyes, mm-hmm. big smile. I was sitting at his coffee shop in my neighborhood early, like 8 o'clock in the morning. He taps me in the shoulder. I hadn't seen him in like 3 years. Yeah. And I turned around. He was like, Will Hines, hey, what's up? Still doing improv? It's great. I miss it. Hey. And he goes, my car's got a flat outside. Do you know if I could ask these people here? I was like, dude, I cannot help.
Oh, man.
Like, I'm hoping to move in here with my fiance, but. Man, places are expensive. Do you know any places? I was like, no, I don't. He's like, well, I'll see you later. Walks out. That's the only time I've seen him in the last 4 years.
Oh, man. That's the perfect interaction to have. Just kind of, you pretty much get all of it right, in that moment.
It's great.
Yeah, he's great.
So this was 2008. You were in We Can't Live in a Cave. And you said that this is like a, sort of a breakthrough or a moment for
you. Yeah, it was. Well, it was more like I was, when I first started doing improv, I didn't know what to think of it, and I didn't know why I was doing it other than I needed some sort of creative outlet. And I remember I would go to the shows and I would watch it and be like, this is awesome, this is great, man, I wish I could do that. Mm-hmm. And never really thought of it, even as I was moving through the classes. And at some point right around 2008, I think I just decided that I really wanted to commit to doing this, and this is something that I really liked and loved. And I think it took me a while to admit to myself that I really wanted to pursue improv, because for someone, at least the way I'm hardwired, it was sort of like I didn't know where this would take me or what this would do for me. And even though I
what's
saw
what's the point of it,
what's the point of it? And I mean, to be honest with you, like, I've never regretted the decision like once in my life to kind of continue doing it, which has been great. And so I think because I decided to commit to it, I was like, well, I'll take more classes. I'll try to do as many different practice groups, or not different, but try to always make practice. And so I think it was just the deciding that I was okay with trying to do like comedy performing, you know, whereas and maybe that could lead me and help me with my writing. And I really liked.
You were already like pursuing acting, right?
Yeah, I was. I moved here to study acting. I went to a conservatory here.
And you're from Baltimore, right?
Mm-hmm. From Baltimore.
You're wearing an Orioles hat right now, are you not?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
Can you say that for the record, please?
That is correct. I'm wearing a Baltimore Orioles hat.
And you are a fan of said team?
I am a fan of.
Do you have an opinion
team
on Dan Duquette, the general manager?
I think he had a great first year.
Yeah.
And now he's been extended.
All right, no further questions.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. I like him. But yeah, and I think the one thing that I remember just feeling was like, I really want to do this. And I think once I decided that I wanted to pursue comedy, and I saw so many different opportunities and avenues you can go, it's because of UCB, or at least felt comfortable taking a leap and saying, oh, maybe this could be something. I feel like that helped me just kind of really commit to like trying to get better as an improviser, trying to, you know, say yes whenever I got a chance to do a sketch or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I had no genuine goals other than just to commit to it, and which I thought was good. Is that a long-winded answer?
It's a great answer. Great. Just saying yes to it and showing up and being nice. And
showing up,
hard.
Being nice, trying to like I really enjoy. I mean, like, I was fortunate enough to be on that We Can't Live in a Cave team, and Benjamin Apple's a very proactive man who was like, come on, guys, let's get together. Let's shoot some sketches. And that sketch is in that George Lucas documentary. That there's a movie called George, the People versus George Lucas.
Yeah.
So like Dan Chamberlain and I are in that movie.
Really?
Yeah, as in a sketch directed by Benjamin Apple.
Huh.
And it was just like those little things. I just look at that tiny thing, which is just like, you know, it's just a clip
from
a sketch. It's a sketch called George Lucas Died in a Car Crash After like the Last Crusade or something.
Right.
And I don't know. It's just like that's a good example of what the way I always looked at UCB or what I was kind of hoping for it was just if I just surrounded myself with creative people, people that I really enjoyed, people I thought were really funny, and you do things, cool things, or even moderately cool things like that can happen. And I don't know, it's funny. It's a nice little tattoo of that experience.
Yeah.
So. I'm curious.
Yes.
You're saying that you weren't that into improv as much as you would be. That there was some turning point after which you got kind of more into it. But I feel like you were good at it right away. I feel like I remember Delaney complimenting you. Wasn't he your first level 5 class?
Shannon was my first level 5 class, and then Delaney, yeah. Delaney was very supportive of me.
Was that from before you decided that you were more committed to it?
No, that was right after. I took 101 and 201 and 301 pretty much back to back.
Yeah.
And then after 301, I took a long break. It felt longer than I think it actually was, but I had personal things going on and, you know, was trying to like just reevaluate and reassess like the decisions I was making and like, is this something I want to do? And I was like really afraid to like dive full head on into
it. So it was earlier than I, okay.
Yeah. And then when I took 401, that's when I got practicing with We Can't Live in a Cave. And then I took like maybe 5 months off from classes there and I was like, all right, I'll sign up for a 501 too because my friends were doing it. And I was like, I'm in this. I'm in it.
Yeah. I remember coaching We Can't Live in a Cave for a while. I coached you guys maybe like a year or around that time. And I remember you as being very good in that group. I remember you as being one of the people you see, you know, students and people you coach like this, who's like really good, but also beating themselves up on the back line for their own moves.
Physically, I would hit myself.
Yeah. I remember you would do a scene and it would be a good scene. And then you would go to the back line and like turn your head, like, you know, turn around and, you know, put your head in your hands and all that stuff.
Oh my God.
Like, this guy's like one of the best people on the group. And, you know,
John, that's so nice.
I sympathize with that, you know, I identify with that.
Yeah. I think you care. It's this like falling in love with something. It's like, or someone, I imagine. but you care about it a lot and you want it to be what you want it to be. And then it's getting frustrating and you don't know what to do. And it's so nice. It's great to hear you say that. And it's really kind to hear you say that because it certainly didn't feel that way in the moment. It was like, nobody knows.
Do you feel good at it now?
Good at improv now?
Yeah.
I feel comfortable at improv now in a way that...
When did that happen?
It happened after I was on a team called Zuleika. I joined that, an improv team. We strictly did Harold's.
Okay, Zuleika. So that was Benjamin Apple, Darcy, Yorkin,
Tim Dunn.
Sydney Hollis.
Sure, yeah.
Benjamin Ragib and Will Story.
Okay.
Yeah. And
you guys like made a good run at Cage Match, right? Didn't you almost take out Ruru?
Yeah, we had one really good show. We almost took out
Ruru. Was one of the like mammoth marathon runs.
And you also won your way into the DCM with the Cage Match tournament, right?
No, we didn't. We got into DCM. We ended up hosting the tournament.
Oh,
okay. You guys asked it.
That's
right. No.
We asked you to host it. That's right.
Yeah.
Easy Lake, it was a powerhouse.
Sorry. It was great. And that was a great experience. And that combined with We Can't Live in a Cave, I was doing improv with people that I really liked.
So during Zuleika, you got comfortable?
I was getting more comfortable, and then I started taking more classes. And honestly, I took a Shannon class, and then I took a Delaney class back to back. And there was something about both of their approaches that I was like, I tried to take what I could from each one of them and blend them into something that I felt like comfortable and strong with. And it was right coming out of those classes that I felt like, I was like, okay, I'm starting to have some opinion on it.
Yeah.
Some idea of what I think what I could do in it and what could be done on the stage. Okay. And starting to take a little bit of the pressure off of me. Delaney has a phrase that he's used in our class, and it's a phrase that I think other people say or in different ways too, but like process over product.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of just like put the work in and trying to make your improv better, and the results will come, and they may not come immediately.
So don't focus on the product.
Don't focus on the product. Focus on just trying to do good improv or solid work, even if it doesn't, I don't know where it's going to take you.
Right.
And that honestly took so much pressure off of myself. This pressure to be funny, this pressure to be a good teammate, mm-hmm. that my teammates were mad when I didn't know what I was doing in a scene or something right. like that.
Because it's a pressure not to reach an end, but to just live in the, being able to relax into the process.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, I think a student likes a rule and they're like, this is X, Y, and Z equals funny, or A plus B plus C. And I think for me, it was just kind of discovering that maybe this teacher won't like the work that I'm doing, but if I'm trying to do it, what they're selling me to do, hopefully something will come from it.
Does
that make me sound arrogant?
It does. It makes you sound very
arrogant. You do sound kind of full of yourself. Kind of like you got it all figured out.
Yeah. No, but now I feel, and it's come with experience too. Like just
it's time.
Yeah. Like Harold Knight helped, and the Jam helped, mm-hmm. and performing on Saturday nights has just helped me get more.
Yeah.
Like, a different approach to scenes than I used to have.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think your approach to scenes is now? If you could talk about the math of it.
The math of it. That there is no math for me so much as it is, like, I'm going to walk out there and I'm just going to have to be as present as I can if somebody's initiating to me. Mm-hmm. And if I remember it, I remember it. And if I don't, I'll try to yes and them. I mean, I will yes and
remember it, like if you know where they're coming from with that initiative.
Coming from with that. And if I'll try to do the best I can. And if I don't get it, you're off. And you're
be
doing
as present as you can. I think that's real good advice.
If you're thinking about something else, it's going to be really hard to really. I mean, I still do it. I mean, it's not like I don't do this now. I just try to, I repeat to myself before every show, like over and over and over again, loud enough. So until I hear it, just like listen and react and be present.
Yeah.
Those are the four.
I love that. I think that's something I always think about. Mm-hmm. Listen and react. If I'm having a bad show, that's what I.
Yeah.
Somebody told me that like level two or level three. I don't remember.
I think maybe you told me that when you coached Robert Barron one time. You're like, listen and react.
Somebody gave me that one right before like a level three grad show, and I was so nervous. Mm-hmm. It might have been John Gemberling. Ooh. But somebody was just sort of like, keep it, like at this point, you're about to do a show. You're not going to get any better than you are. So like something really simple. Like I think the listen and react was like, if you listen and react, the show will move forward.
Yeah. It will. Like something will happen.
Then, you know, some of your moves will be good and some of them won't, but like just focus. I don't know. I thought it was helpful.
I'm usually pretty checked out.
You work on being detached.
Yeah, I think about other
things. The mantras you say to yourself before a show is like disengage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ignore.
Care less.
I think about like all the other things I have to do later that night.
Get my head full of other shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think like
you start looking at all your to-do lists, get stressed about it.
Yeah. And,
you have a weird approach.
I also think like, where are we going after the show? Like I'll
you work
if somebody
into
initiates
scenes.
A scene with me, my first thought is like, I wonder what we're doing after.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of scenes with you where the second line is, where's this going?
Yeah.
You just say that out loud.
Sometimes I'll stop people. I'll be like, I don't think your idea is that great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, it's honest.
Yeah.
You say cut, let's start the scene over. I think this is bullshit.
Yeah. My favorite move is the wake up.
Yeah.
That, you know? Yeah.
You once placed a dinner order in the middle of a show. We were
I was like, what are you? I'll open up the food service. Yeah. Like the
I've seen you hand out scripts a lot in second beats.
Yeah,
but they're pretty good.
Yeah, after the first beats, I'll go off stage. I'll go to the green room and I'll write the rest of the show.
It's not
bad. What Harold team were you on? I forget.
Sure.
Oh, you were on Robert Barron.
I was on Robert Barron. That was my first Harold team. And then after Robert Barron was together, I moved to Grandma's Ashes. So I've only had two.
Mm-hmm.
Two Harold.
And you were with Grandma's Ashes from the beginning.
Very beginning, from day one.
Okay.
Yeah. We just had our 2-year little anniversary. We didn't do anything, but I mean,
it happened. It occurred.
It occurred. Time has passed. I'm older and slightly balder.
So what was the move to being on Harold Knight like for you?
So
like you get put on a Harold team and you're like,
I was so shocked to be a part of it. And I was really like, I was at work and had no reception. And I remember just like getting, like I was like, I was talking to Darcy online, and she was like, I just got cast on Harold. And I was like, woo, that's amazing. That's awesome. I was like, I wonder. I was like, I'll just check. So I had to like call my voicemail from my phone, which couldn't do it. And it was just like, you have one new message. And I was like, no way. And I was like, ah! And I freaked out. I was shaking. And from that moment, I was like, oh, God, what am I going to do? I have to be on Harold right now. And really put a lot of unnecessary pressure on that. But it was great. It was a great experience. I got to be with the same cast for 2 years straight. No changes on Robert Barron. It was, I didn't know a lot of the people on the team, but I got the chance to meet them and play with them, and they were just fun. But I noticed that Harold Knight was a whole different animal. There was something else there than it was when I was doing shows with We Can't Live in a Cave and Zuleika. And it's kind of hard to really describe.
Yeah.
Other than just like, You want to constantly put your best work out there as well as your team's best work out there. Mm-hmm. And if you feel like you're falling anywhere subpar, maybe again, this is the way I'm hardwired, but like you just like, oh God, you can fall into like a real web of like, I'm terrible at this. Yeah. I don't deserve this. And it's, you know, and whether people, I'm sure there's a ton of people out there that could say that about me and they have completely valid for feeling that way. But the fact is that, you know, all the people on that team and any team that's on Harold Knight are there because they're great. Lloyd Knight, they're great. That's why they're on those teams.
Yeah. Right.
And you just have to, you have to just trust that. And it's, yeah.
I think that's really interesting. Like the psychology of being on Harold Knight is one of the strangest things to watch people go, or Lloyd Knight, I'm sure is the same.
Did you guys feel that at all?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
But I truly was put on early. Okay. Like before I was ready. There's no doubt in my mind. Like it was also so long ago, it was a different thing for me. Mm-hmm. November of 2000 is when I got put on Harold Knight. It was a different world.
Yeah.
But I still freaked out.
It was 2001. Hmm. 2000 or
like
2001.
April or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. The first auditions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
I was super nervous. Could not remember anything from the opening of the first beats for like a year. Oh, like God. I wouldn't have survived in the current.
My eyeballs were sweating that night I went out there. It was like you would have thought I was crying, but it was just heat coming out of my face. Mm-hmm. Like I was so nervous.
You guys had a great first show.
Oh, thank you very much. You can watch it online. It's on Vimeo.
Right?
Really?
Yeah.
On Vimeo?
It's on Vimeo. Check it out.
That's where Terry Withers did the move with the elevator.
Yes.
Like pushing the
button. Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Only thing I'm good at is remembering Harold's ex. It's true. I remember most. It's kind of Rain Man like.
Yeah.
I've got the only job where that skill is applicable.
Yeah. I watched that show once.
It's a great
year.
Show.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, it's funny to watch that show now, especially because I go back and I'll look at it and I'm like, holy moly, it is. I am so. You can see how nervous
really
we all are. Like, even Dan Klein, who's like my. I love
him. Yeah, he's
so
a very
much.
Confident and cool customer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, you can just see.
You're
like,
so keyed up, though. Like, all your friends have come to watch. Mm-hmm. There's such investment in that. It's so strange.
The the stage you've done your class shows on all of a sudden feels like 5 feet wide and 4 feet deep, and you have no room to move, and you're like, why are you sitting on that? I mean, like, and you're like, I can't do this, and you say one thing, and you have no idea what's come out of your mouth, and maybe there's a huge laugh, and you're like, was that it? Is it over? Mm-hmm. You know?
And the huge laugh sounds less than it actually is.
I know. It really does. It sounds like a wall of sound.
Do you think there's like a survivor's guilt sort of feeling? Like, you were on these practice groups with amazing people. So, like, you work with Benjamin Apple that time, and you get in a team, and he's not. Do you feel like, I better be good enough to deserve being here when Benjamin, or I'm using his name arbitrarily, but, like, someone who I know is good that you would like a lot, who fill in whatever you want.
Right.
You know, like, people that you know are great, and for whatever reason didn't get picked at that time.
Absolutely. I mean, there is that why me?
Like, I have to prove it.
Yeah, I have to prove, and I think it's... It is. That's exactly it. Because I was fortunate enough to be... I got on Harold Knight around a time, I feel like, that there wasn't too much turnover. Like, I think there was, like, 400 people who auditioned and maybe only, like, 16 got on. Like, one and a half new teams were made or something. And it was, like, there were so many of my friends that I'm, like, I know for a fact that this person has, at this time, way more deep of a skill set and way more... like
time invested or practice or something
and,
or whatever.
And like seen so many more shows than I have. And it's sort of like, oh God, like I not only want to prove it that I'm worthy of being there, but I also like want to like do well, because it, I mean, like they are so much a part of my improv experience as well, you know, like,
yeah,
it's, yeah, I mean, I really, yeah, I that is a good question.
It's strange because like to do well at improv, you have to be willing to fail. Like that's part of the equation.
Oh God, I know.
Like you, it's got to be loose because it's made up. Like you can't play it neatly or it destroys it.
Exactly.
It's too stiff.
And it's a miracle that it ever works given the.
Yeah, but like, but the psychology of Harold Knight does make you, or I can understand this to new teams, it makes you feel like I can't screw up.
Yeah.
Right.
But you have to be, I mean, everybody screws up.
Yeah, it's this weird kind of thing. Of like,
I think
well,
it's almost there has to be a certain required amount of bad move, quote unquote bad moves, or it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
I feel
because
like
that means you're, if you're making a bad move with, I mean, it means you're trying something, and you have to be trying. I mean, like it, maybe, you're
or you're
trying,
just like reacting sort of instinctually in a way.
It's
that
this
you
weird
to
thing too that the organism of the team has to be as such where there are no bad moves, where like you can make a bad move, but there's somebody else there to sort of grab you and scoop you back up.
Yeah.
You know? But also
I know, yeah, good and bad, I shouldn't even be using those words. But I just mean like things that your student brain, after having gone through these classes where your teachers has very strict like rules of what to do or not, you gotta let that go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just allow yourself to kind of be vulnerable.
Vulnerable is a great word.
But it's hard to do that.
It is.
Yeah, because again, the high pressure of the environment.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, yeah, it's just, gosh, it is. And you want to do so well because you saw so many people do so well, too.
Right.
Like, I know what 1985 looked like when I was watching them. And not to say that because you're sitting here, but, like, I know what you guys looked like when I was watching your show.
But I feel that, too, because most of 1985's most lauded moments happened after I left. So, like, people would be like, oh, I love 1985. Like, this show's like, yeah, I wasn't on the team then. Yeah. Or this show's like, yeah, that was the week after I left.
Yeah.
Like, literally the week after I was gone, that happened.
But it's also like we talk about this a lot. There, like you get to that level, and then you immediately become afraid of losing that.
Yeah.
You know, so there is like it takes effort to
and the one thing
sort of work yourself off of that fear. You know, work your or feel that and like do whatever the fuck you're gonna do.
Yeah.
In spite of how you feel.
I think and. Also, I mean, at the end of the day, genuinely, and this is something that maybe some people don't like, but I think it's the idea that, like, you want to do well, and it's good that you want to do well, and it's good that this is something you care so much about that you can make yourself feel bad about it in the moment.
Yeah.
But it's just not worth it if you're going to spend money to get a rehearsal studio, to have a group and practice and just do, you know, one show every 2 weeks or something like that, at least the way it was. It's just Harold. I mean,
it's
not just Harold Knight, but it's also just Harold Knight.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? And
that's a Martin DeMatt exactly quote, I think, right? Like, you do not have permission to use this art form to feel bad about yourself or something.
Yeah,
like
maybe
that's where I think that's.
Yeah, I think it's true. Like, I used to think about that on Harold Knight. It's like, I only get, like, 2 of these shows a month. Ooh. I don't want to, like, I came all the way to this theater. I'm not going to, like, only have 2 shows a month and come all the way here just to leave here feeling like shit about myself.
Yeah.
You know?
You'll.
I would do it anyway, but.
Yeah.
You'll resent it if you keep doing that. You'll hate it.
But a lot of it was, I felt bad about how good I was when I left. I was like, oh, was I too great out there?
Right. I'm sure that's what you thought.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm kind of embarrassed about how funny I am.
Yeah, you showed everybody up.
yeah.
Too good, you said.
Yeah, I always thought like, oh, I hope the people that I was on practice groups with get it now. Like, I hope they understand.
Oh, man. That's
so now you're on Grandma's Ashes and you got you know that?
Yeah.
Did you know?
Yeah, I okay. Oh yes. Oh god. I have a show right now.
So what for you was the transition from being on Harold Knight with Grandma's Ashes to being on a weekend doing a weekend show with them like?
A little bit more freedom and form and an excitement to play for a crowd that maybe doesn't know exactly what we're doing right at the top. Mm-hmm. I think like Harold Knight has a good mixture of students and then people who are just figuring it out and people who are just coming to see a show. And I think that there's, you know, a savviness to that crowd. Whereas They're an improv educated crowd. Whereas on Saturday nights, very possible that there's a bunch of people who know what improv is coming to see the show, but at the same time, I've had like high schools from Minnesota come and watch the show. They have no idea what we're doing.
Right.
And so like the laughs are different. What's hitting, what's not hitting. And now we get a chance to like, I think we're really into the idea of like playing fast and loose and giving them like a comedy show, especially in the first half. And in that second half, we're into like just slowing it down and trying some weird shit in the second. Am I allowed to swear on here?
Swear all you want.
What do you do in the second half of your show?
It's sort of right now.
Uh-huh.
We've just wavered between either like a mono scene or like find it in the moment. We've done La Ronde. We've done a mono scene. Like last or 2 weeks ago, we did three long scenes right at the top and just sort of tried to tie them all together.
Oh, really?
I think at the most, we might have just done three long two-person scenes.
That's fun.
And it was one of the most satisfying shows in the week.
That was your second half?
That was our second half.
So but you don't decide that beforehand. Like, you just kind of go out and whatever it feels like it, you just do it.
Yeah, whatever it feels like. We did the week prior, I did a mono scene with, there was only four of us. So we're like, we didn't decide it was going to be a mono scene, but I think we all maybe in the back of our head thought it might be.
But like 3 or 4 minutes in, you're like, oh, this could be it. And then like 6 or 7 minutes in, you're like, this is it. We're staying here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's because Drew and I let Lydia and Aubrey go for a while. And we're like, we'll just join this.
Yeah.
So much fun.
That's
fun. Oh, it's great.
Do you feel that that pressure and stress that you were talking about Harold Knight has diminished at all? Or do you still feel it?
I feel it in a different way because, I mean, these are all paying customers. No one's getting in for free on that show. And
I do.
You know, Sypha does. Sypha's there. Sypha is actually a point of confidence for a lot of us, I think. I'm not kidding you. Like, you sit in the same seat, you know, we know where you are, and you were at our very first show.
He's like a talent.
Is that true? You go see Grandma's Ashes Sypha, you sit in the same seat?
Almost every week.
Yeah, Saturday nights.
I was the first person in the theater for their first weekend night show.
Oh, man.
I will admit now, that I snuck it.
Why, Sypha? What do you love so much about Grandma's Ashes?
This will be interesting. You tell us that, and we'll see.
First of all, when I used to go to Harold Knight, I'm about, let's say, 2 years into UCB.
Okay.
Yeah.
2 years. Yeah, because I had you in 101, right? Yeah, I think that was about 2 years ago.
Like a quarter. And I used to see Grandma's Ash's name come up, and I'd be like, ugh, I hate that team. Just because of the name.
Like, okay.
I hate the name.
You don't like that name, all right. Yeah.
That name sucks.
Right.
And then I saw them. I was like, oh, what an idiot I am. These guys are good.
Where'd you see him? At Harold Knight?
At Harold Knight, yeah.
Okay.
And then they became my favorite. I guess the last team is like the Anchor or whatever it is. Like,
oh yeah, at that time, no, on Harold Knight.
Yeah, when it was five groups, before they broke
the
it up.
The fourth
into two
team was
the
anchor
second
team.
To last team was the Anchor team.
Oh, well, they were last. They used to be last.
Huh.
Is that where you last?
Unless you just took off as many people did after the fourth show.
Yeah, we might have been last a few times. Absolutely, we would go.
Maybe you were fourth.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, possibly.
Whatever. I really liked them. They were super fun. I liked watching them. And then when they started doing the jam at the Beast, I would go watch that. And I was like, I think I'm a fan, groupie fan.
So you've watched a lot of improv because you are obsessed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what is good about them?
From
someone who's watching them's perspective,
the fun level, like, okay, you know how the theory is like death by Ruru. Like, I heard that they say before they go on stage, instead of "I got your back," "watch your back."
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like fun to watch that antagonistic back and forth with Grandma's Ashes. It feels like they just love each other, and it's just so much love and support. And you'll never, like, be embarrassed or be like stuck out on stage by yourself. Never.
Yeah.
Where I saw Chris Gethard once at an ASCAT trying to pick up Zach Wood.
Yeah.
He was trying to be like, he was like a giant robot, and he was trying to pick him up, and he looks over to Gemberling and he's like, "Help me pick Zach up." And Gemberling goes, "Nah."
Yeah.
And so Gethard is screaming, "Fuck you, fuck you."
Yeah.
Fuck, not in character.
Yeah.
That's Chris Gethard.
Right, right.
And that would never happen at a Grandma's Ashes show. And the support and the fixing of anything that goes wrong, they fix everything.
Thanks. What do you mean? Like, if something gets like left unaddressed, or like something doesn't make
anything,
sense, they
anything
account
that's kind of not making sense, it's justified. Like, I mean, swiftly.
Now, you go every week, though.
Almost, yeah.
So now what is you? Okay, so like, what are you looking for when you go? What are you trying to find?
Oh, no. I go to watch them for fun. I don't even.
You turn off the student brain.
I turn off my student brain when I go watch Grandma's Ashes.
All right.
It's really cool. Just a fun show. I took my mom there recently.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What did she think?
She loved it. Mm-hmm. She loved it.
All right. Brandon, your rebuttal?
My rebuttal. To all this? I disagree.
So would you say that that's an accurate depiction of your team?
Or? I think on stage, like, there is a...
not accurate, but, like, the things that he's talking about, are those things that you also recognize about Grandma's Ashes? And is there anything to any extent you of that that you try to do actively as a team?
I think there, we do all have a desire to get out there and do the scenes and be a part of the show. Like, I mean, I can't think of really one Grandma's Ashes show where I can't think of something that somebody's done that has been like just the highlight of the, and that sounds self, that sounds masturbatory, but it's I think the desire is to get out there and be in it and support each other. And there is a thing where I do feel very fearless. Like Morgan Jarrett and I tend to start scenes from a very like, just like, hello, sort of place.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to have a big premise. There's also the desire where if somebody puts something out that's huge, like, you know, if Winston's leading a group game and it's, you know, like he has an idea with it, we'll just jump out there and just do it right away. And I think that's been something that's been really nice. There's no questions asked. It's all statements until we need to ask those questions, right? I don't know.
Sure.
I hope that was articulate enough.
Yeah.
I'm filled with so many nachos.
I could ramble, but I'm not going to. Go ahead, John.
No, I just wanted to ask one thing. As you mentioned, like, starting out scenes and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have... what's your preferred way of starting scenes? Like, you guys, you do an interview at the top of the show.
I think I don't know if I can officially, but we're like changing that up right now.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, we're changing it up. But we did do an interview for a while.
Do you come out of that thinking about premises that you want to initiate or about, like, what are you thinking after that opening?
Sure. After we've interviewed somebody, I'm usually thinking, is there some point of view that this person had that I thought was funny? Or is there some situation that I thought was funny? And if the answer is no, because sometimes it's not that they were bad interviews, it's just that maybe I just didn't register the same thing or I couldn't think of it quick enough. I don't want to waste time on the back of the line trying to think of the perfect initiation because before you know it, like, the show has already started. And so I'll try to, you know, pick a detail and just start from an organic place that's hopefully in my world, somewhat emotional.
Okay.
Am I allowed to say the word emotion?
You're allowed to.
You're allowed to,
yeah. Am I? Mm-hmm.
You are.
Okay. All right.
Now, let's say you can think of a point of view or a situation. Mm-hmm. What's the next step for you?
Sure. Just what situation? So if it's a point of view that's really funny, like there one time, or I don't know if this is a thing, let's just say like there's a, like somebody wants to buy someone's love, right? And it's like a father figure, and it's just like who doesn't care will literally write a check for anything. I'll try to find like the most fun situation that could be in.
Okay.
Right.
Or like if it's like, or like, why would this be funny to me? And just try to put it in the situation that's the most active. And that's generally the moment of like discovery. So that's a bad example because I can't think of one right now, but, if it's sort of like if you have a weird doctor, you might as well just see him with a patient. You know what I mean?
And right.
Just, what's the most active,
right,
honest situation you could put them in?
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's where it is. I don't like I do this a lot, and it's a pet peeve of something that I do, which is sometimes talking about the situation, like, what'd you do in there? You know,
right.
I've been noticing you wearing a lot of brown suits lately. You know,
so initiating something that's just talking about something in the past.
Yeah, sort of with that reaction. Emotion, for me, that word helps.
So the what it is for you is thinking.
What do you
like,
think that word does for you?
The word emotion?
Yeah.
I think puts me in a point of reaction. And so it puts me in a point that I'm caring about something right now.
Yeah.
And if I'm caring about it right now, I might be able to discover it.
I think that's a great question.
I might be able, it might be in the, it might happen again, or it might.
Is that something that you were always attracted to in improv? That's something you always try to do?
Yeah. I'm attracted to the idea of being in the moment. Like, just from, like, drama school, like, the idea of Meisner, you know, Which I think even when you coached us, you used to have us do some form of Meisner technique.
Mm-hmm. Is that from the Mulaney class that you made him do that?
Is that from the Mulaney class that I made them do that?
All right.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know that like when you, but I remember being like, oh, this is this. I saw the correlation between the two, just being in the moment and so forth. I'm attracted to that. I'm attracted to just really acting. That's what I'm attracted to. I'm attracted to it as a piece of theater and comedy. Theater is what we're doing. Comedy is just the genre.
Here's a hypothetical.
Yes.
Say you're in a show. It's about two thirds of the way through, and it's going okay, but you start to feel it's about to drag. Or I don't know if you ever have this feeling, or you become conscious of, oh, we're moving into like the last kind of leg of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Not like last 2 minutes, but last like 8 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And you're like, I feel like it's slowing down and being flat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you do? Like, do you have anything that for that? Like, do you go to, I'll give you some examples. Like, do you go to Second Beach? Like, I got to bring something back and make it bigger. Or do you go for like, I need like just to make something more immediate and high stakes to make it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Or are you like, I got to slow it down now and just try to like make it more real and hope that something pops? Do you have anything like that that you do, or is it such case by case?
Well, it's like the end game is one of the hardest things in chess type of thing, you know? And so like you're at the end of the show, you want to end strong. Otherwise you're not going to walk off feeling as great as maybe you could for a great show leading up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a grab bag, really. It's sort of like you try to like maybe like read the audience of like what really hit, and did we leave it early enough that if we were to revisit it now, it could hit again. There's a lot of things.
That's interesting. Did we leave it early enough? Like, did you blow it out?
Did we blow it out, and was it farther back enough in the show that maybe it would be a pleasant surprise, or is it, you know what I mean?
Because you're talking about like a scene or a moment here. Like,
yeah, I'm talking, yeah, like a scene or a moment, or like a fun character. Like if, you know, if Ryan's playing some fun character, I'm just using Grandma's Ashes, and if Ryan's playing a very funny character and we've just seen him and now we're in a new scene and we see the red light's on, it's time to wrap it up. Maybe it's too soon to bring it back, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking about that. I would say that a second beat would, if I wish I thought of just the idea of starting a straight up, maybe even analogous second beat of something.
Yeah.
So you're hitting a game, but it's a little bit different, and then you're able to hopefully put yourself in a position where a surprising connection can happen. That's the dream, right? Well, that's what we're dreaming of. But like, most of the time I'm like, oh God, maybe a little, that's where I panic still a little bit. My end game's not too good.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that.
I mean,
it
needs work.
We get to that point in a lot of improv shows, and I've been on Torco shows with you too, where it's just like we're just throwing half court shots.
Yeah, it is half court like, shots is a great.
Yeah,
is a great.
You know, you're just shooting 3-pointers and half court shots. Trying to
that's what it feels like.
Trying to shit and fart from half court.
That's right. Yeah, into a net, hopefully. Yeah.
Yep.
To win a car.
To do. It's very hard to do.
Yeah, like somebody will walk on, you're like, Bill Clinton! And just like, they didn't need to be there because they literally made like a TV appearance like 20 minutes ago on the show.
Oh, man. So when you used to coach a lot, now you're a teacher. I'm sure you still coach sometimes. But when you were coaching like a ton, I remember at that time, like my brother was the first person who told me that like you were really great. He'd be like, oh, I'm coaching this group and I couldn't do them for 3 weeks, and they got Brandon and they came back better. I remember that was the first time I heard about it. So, like, what do you do as a coach? What do you try to do? I mean, obviously, you can't always.
Sure. Hopefully, I mean, as a coach, it's different than teaching. I don't feel like I'm there to instruct as a coach. I'm there to facilitate, and so that means to me that if I'm working with a group of people, like a team, an improv team, and they have a goal like towards the show, it's like working the pieces of improv that I think are fundamentally important. I personally find fundamentally important, or I think that they might need to work on. If I'm like, hey, you guys aren't justifying, we'll work on some justification, and then we'll try to find the correlation between those fundamentals and what the show might end up being. And so it's about,
well, that's interesting, like what the payoff would be in terms of what show would.
I think, and focusing really, like, guys, that process over product has really done a number on me, and I know that sounds crazy, but like it's just like, just we'll try this stuff. And I try to tell people, I set them up, I'm like, you know, it's maybe not going to feel good to do this exercise. You're not going to like these scenes. Or I tell them this flat out.
Yeah.
And it's like, but trust that the that you doing this dramatic Oscar moment speech in the middle of your scene might work that muscle. It's all about muscle memory, I think.
Yeah.
And work that muscle with each other to be like, oh, injecting a little bit of like passion or emotion into this scene might rev it up a little bit or something. And so basically I try to, I just try to like try to get them collaborating. That's the main goal. Mm. Get the teams collaborating with each other.
So it's not about like I'm going to go in and I'm going to fix this group or I'm going to like make them great. It's about like let's work these little muscle groups. Mm-hmm. Let's be uncomfortable with the scenes that we're doing towards a larger, hopefully larger result somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I think because I there's nothing I can I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I can fix them. I mean, I don't know if anybody can really fix. But I think like you can hopefully again strengthen the muscles and so forth. That's what great coaches that I've. I mean, I was lucky that I had four consistent coaches coming up, and like they all worked really, really well to like just work fundamentals and you know, and just focus that idea of strengthening that core, sort of like Pilates, like improv Pilates. And then even like the coaches I've had on Harold Knight too, like. Collaboration, I think, is a word that I really like with the team. And you got to like, oh, why are you doing that? Like, why is Will acting that way? And we'll talk about it. And what were you thinking? I try to facilitate a conversation rather than a lot of heavy notes.
Right.
Right. Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. And you coached Lloyd teams for a while.
I coached Lloyd and Harold. I coach a Harold team right now, and I coach Lloyd. I coach Lloyd Knight for a little bit too.
So now there's there are teams that like they're going up and they're putting out a product every week. Is your approach to coaching Lloyd and Harold teams different than your approach to coaching indie teams or practice groups or things like that?
I mean, of course. I mean, like depending on. I mean, like Harold Knight and Lloyd Knight. I mean, like they're doing shows at our theater, so I mean, there's a little extra. I mean, the standard to, I think, there's a form standard of sort of like this is what UCB is expecting. Whereas with an independent group, if you're performing at Under St. Mark's or Triple Crown or whatever, it's not that the stakes are low. I don't mean, don't say that at all. It's just that it's like, what are you getting out of this show? There's no like conformist, like here's what
you're
you
doing
have
this
to
for
hit.
Yourself. You're not cast on a team on behalf of a theater.
Exactly. I think that's. That's what it is. And I know it's like the Harold team that I'm coaching right now, who is great. I love working with them so much.
It's which one?
Bucky.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm having a blast because they're so willing and ready to try new things and just push themselves. And I think that's fun. Great. Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything?
One more. I got one more. What are common questions that people... what are you laughing at, Saifa?
Am I boring?
No. Your face is always like, did I give the right answer?
Yeah.
But it's your answer.
I know.
Yeah. Right answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get that picture? Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Oh, no. Uh-huh. Oh, great.
So you're...
Common problem. What are common questions and problems that, like, people who are either... I don't know. That, like, people... you might not... You're probably not coaching students right now a lot, but I'm just trying to think of, like... What are common problems and questions that people ask you? Like advice
from like
what are people worried about when they're like when they're trying to get better at improv? What's on their minds?
A lot of times it's like I feel like if the going blank from the opening, like not knowing what my scene partner is going for or not having an idea, so I'm just going to hang back. And like, what do I do when that happens? When I feel like we've done the opening and I can't remember anything, that's probably the biggest one. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't, or like, how do I make this move without stepping on somebody else's toes? Or how do I make this move without feeling like selfish or something like that? Those are the two that how do you make them? How do I communicate to my scene partner? Like, how do I say that this is what I want to play when? And like, how do I accept the fact that they don't know what I'm going for?
And how do I not step on my scene partner's scene idea? And those are two pretty common problems, I think, for young improvisers. Hmm. So what do you tell people?
Oh, gosh.
Or what would be your advice for getting past that?
Yeah. My advice for getting past not remembering something from the opening is just, I think there's Do you? Can I ask you guys a question first?
Sure, yeah.
Sure.
And Sypha too. Like you've been doing improv for 2 years, and you guys have been doing it for 73 years.
Sypha's also super
years.
Obsessed.
He's so, also super obsessed. Yeah.
2 years worth of real time. Yes. Sypha obsessed time is like 10 years.
Yeah, but it's. Do you still walk away from an opening with not a plethora of ideas, or no?
Do you? I walk away from an opening usually with two or three.
Two or three. You still can do it, right?
Uh huh. I walk away from the opening on my iPhone ordering dinner.
Mm-hmm, that's right. That's right.
The Steph Brothers don't do an opening, so I don't have as much practice doing them. When my brother and I do shows, we'll do openings sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll have two is a pretty guaranteed number.
Yeah.
I'll be conscious if I don't have shit. I better have two coming out of this.
Great. Cool.
Yeah.
So you have an idea. You have a goal. Sypha, how about you?
No. I suck at remembering stuff from the opening.
Okay.
I like it when we just start.
Yeah. Or starting organically off a suggestion. Yeah.
I find that this is an interesting thing that I have with Airwolf shows is that I do the interview and I can constantly find that I constantly find myself walking away from the opening having forgotten to balance my mind between asking questions and absorbing information. Yeah. So I'll frequently walk away being like, oh, wait, what were the, you know, like, because I'm not, if I'm on the back line, I'm in that mind space of like filtering ideas for like fun premises. But
yeah.
I forget to do that sometimes as the interviewer.
Can I say one real quick?
Please.
I remember something. If it's a monologue, it's great. But like pattern game or like organic openings, like I was doing a Shannon class, I have trouble remembering.
Sure.
I don't know, maybe because I'm not in it. But when I hear a story or like interviews, I think I would do good at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I only ask because I think it's something that, I mean, you have to really just do enough times to be like, you tell yourself before a show, I'm going to walk away with these many ideas.
Right.
Right. And you're saying like, okay, with a monologue, I can get this, but I'm having trouble with figuring this out. And then you're like, I have to switch my brain in between these two things. It's going to be different, I think, for everyone of how you're going to process that opening or how if you're going blank. And you just have to find the way that you can start ideas and trust that if you just come away, like we talk about it in our 201 curriculum, I think, of just like starting with just a detail from a monologue or just starting with an idea of like, this is just something that you know, think is funny or weird and just trust that that idea is going to be okay. It doesn't have to be the game. Pattern game is different, but
its own animal,
Yeah, its own animal. But I think otherwise it's just about exploring and trusting that, you know what, if this was said in the monologue, if I was really listening to what was going on, if I was watching my show from the back line or watching my show from in it, I'll probably at least have some idea of something, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's on your teammates then, kind of, right? Like, if you kind of, like you said, sometimes you come out of grandma's ashes and just say, hello, you know, so maybe in the opening there was a funny way someone said hello, and you just might say it like that, and you hope that your teammate will catch you, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, trust that, like, if you... it's not called openings. It's called improv. And so you can improvise. You're a good improviser. Right. You can be a good improviser.
That's right.
You don't have to be a good improviser to be a good improviser. Wait. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To be good at improv.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think I know what you mean.
You don't have to be good openings or to be good at improv.
That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think about it a lot. Like, how much attention and time gets devoted to openings and becoming better at openings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ultimately, you know, the first 3 minutes of your show.
I know. It's so, people stress.
I feel like 80% of people's stress goes towards it.
I know. And it's like, what about the meat of your scenes? If let's just say we did a pattern game and you had no idea.
Yeah.
And I initiated with like, doctor, I'm going to be pantsless for the rest of my life. And you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right?
But I think
you could play that scene, right? You could play that scene. You could play that scene and you could play that scene.
Right.
And I think it's just like, God, well, okay, I didn't have anything. Maybe I won't initiate a scene because, you know, but maybe I'll respond to one, you know? I don't know. Has this just been like the pretentious hour?
No, it's
this
true.
Is the stuff that I'm really interested in. Like, yeah, I find that the rest of what you said is bullshit to me.
Yeah,
this
please.
Part,
right.
I'm not really from Baltimore.
It's an interesting and it's a difficult thing because, the opening is the first 3 minutes of your show, but it's also like part of the larger theatrical experience of it, like you talked about. And it's this is my opinion, but ideally this is where you are developing the premises or the ideas for your show, mm-hmm. you know? So it is like...
I think an opening is for... I mean, I get very temperamental about stuff, and right now I'm down on openings. I mean, mm-hmm. I know that, like, I'm in charge of the school and, like, teaching, and so I teach them, but, like, I feel like they take away from the fundamentals. I think ultimately when you get comfortable with improv, openings don't occupy a big part of your brain. Like, they just help you start a scene in the middle. Like, rather than doing a lot of discovery, an opening just lets you start right at something funny. And that's a huge gift. Mm-hmm. But from that point forward, you're still just doing the same improv you would have done off a suggestion.
Absolutely. You're just kind of doing it in reverse. It's sort of like, it's a tennis match, and it's like who, what, where. This is very basic, but it's just like if you're drawing a line across the page, it's like who, what, where. You bat that stuff back and forth until something unusual comes up. And
right.
There it is, right? That's an organic scene. You have to do all that work in order to get there.
Yeah.
And now with this, you're starting with the star. Well, I drew a star with my finger on the table, but like, okay. Yeah, you're starting with that. But this stuff you still have to do. It's still the same improv.
Yeah, you just like presume what it was. Mm-hmm. Based on experience, you're like, well, given that this guy is saying he's pantsless from now on, mm-hmm. and I'm the doctor, there's only like sort of a couple rough ways that could be true, yeah. and we'll get it. Like, well, we're on the same page enough that we'll figure.
Openings
it out.
Also, if done right, set the tone for your show, and when done wrong, also set the tone for your show. Mm-hmm. I think as well. I think it's like I've always thought of them as like the on tract. Of the
oh, yeah.
show,
the entract?
You know, like if you're,
that?
It's
overture. Maybe?
Yeah, it's the overture oh, okay. of your show. You know,
the word overture wasn't pretentious enough for you, so you had to say a more. Pretentious
I'm a very smart person. Overture. And I need to.
Sometimes
like,
the entract is at the beginning of the second act, right?
That's true. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is. It is. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
It's also the maybe? Second track on Quadrophenia. The overture is instead of the first track. It's
great
the,
Stones it's like, album. Great.
That's a Who album, right? I honestly am not sure.
Yes.
Okay.
It's, yeah, one of their rock operas.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that it's, like I said, it's part of the larger piece of theater, and I think it's a good thing to be able to be good at. Openings are frustrating, and I think sometimes it's easy for an audience to come to a show like a Harold or whatever and watch an opening and be like, what the fuck am I watching right now?
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a reason to like move away from them.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a reason to like figure out how to get better at them.
But you guys, tell me what you think of this. It's just, mm-hmm. I think that they're for you. The opening is for you on the team, you know, to like that first 3 minutes of the show is just talking to each other. And then the rest of the show can be.
Yeah, I think that's the most important part of it.
Maybe
it can
not.
Be more than that, but I think that's if no other goal is going to be met, that's the one that should be met.
I think that's a better way of phrasing it.
There's the team getting on the same page and pitching ideas. Then there is how good your ideas are coming out of it, mm-hmm. or what kind of ideas. And then above that, it's like as a piece of entertainment, it can do all of them. But I feel like if you're only going to have one, at the very least, the team should walk off having spoken to each other and gotten on the same page. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
In the best Harolds that I have seen, part of the fun is watching all of the things that were established in the opening get used in the Harold. You know, big things, little things, like as much as you can. Like I used to think about openings as like watching a team start with this brick wall and then like destroying the brick wall. And then by the end of the Harold, putting the brick wall back together mm-hmm. again, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a rewarding thing to watch from a group that can do an opening well.
Yes, I would agree. I think like if you're doing an opening well and it's showing what your show is going to be like, and then you kind of like the previously mm-hmm. on Breaking Bad, like, mm-hmm. and so just saying, here's all the things we've set
yeah,
up.
Yeah, right.
You know,
you also can see the personality of a team in its opening.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like whatever they're like kind of comes out the way they do it. Mm-hmm. Like if they're going to be a cerebral sort of think bot team mm-hmm. or if they're like kind of meta wearing the characters of their real selves on their sleeves a lot. If
or
yeah.
who's
kind of
sleeping
team.
With who. That's always you fun
always
to figure out.
Yeah.
You can mm-hmm. always tell.
Mm-hmm. Can you?
You can always tell who shouts yeah. that suggestion first
and you can
in
always,
the pattern game.
Like
they bone in. They be bone in. Okay, I'm being really weird. The coffee is hitting.
Right. Like I said, I've watched teams do like kind of half-assed openings or like sloppy openings where they you could clearly see they just kept missing each other communications wise.
Yeah.
And then you watch their Harold be the same way where like they're not communicating with each other. They're not getting into a rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something like artistic and spiritual about that opening.
Yeah.
That reaches over the rest of the piece.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's nice. Ritualistic, is that what you said?
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of I believe firmly in the ritualistic aspect of Harold.
Yeah. It's so hard. Harolds are so hard.
Oh yeah, they're terribly hard.
Do you think how much easier are they if you take away the opening? If you come off a suggestion and just do a Harold off that, how much easier do they get?
How much time do I have in my show? That's the right thing now? Is that like those beats fly by so quickly.
Yeah.
It feels like when you're in class, when I'm teaching a class and I'm teaching the Harold, I'm like, woo, that was over. Oh my God. And then when I'm in the show, it feels even quicker. And it's like, you got to just get to the stuff. And that's what makes it harder is that you're trying to fulfill all of these things. You're trying to find three funny games that you explored in your opening. Make those your beats. Mm-hmm. Do a group game. Go back to them.
I'm wondering if we should teach it so that we teach it without an opening first. Have them do it like a couple times without an opening, and then you add an opening on, because like, okay, now you kind of and let the Harold be long, let it be like 35 minutes and kind of aimless. Mm-hmm. But it's like, all right, now you kind of see where you ended up getting. Now we're going to put an opening in the top, and you got to try to just start a little further in.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And then, I don't know.
Oh, that would be interesting.
I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, I'm in my head doing Harolds, and it's like, is it Harolds or is it openings? And is it openings or is it just the pattern game? Mm-hmm. Like, what could I substitute out until you're not in your head anymore? Or is it just you need a certain amount of time and you're going to be in your head until that, no matter what?
Yeah, that's what I wonder.
I bet you if you put a monologue or no opening, people would not be so scared of Harolds. Then once they're not so scared, then you add on an opening of any kind, and then you add on the pattern game opening, and they'd be ready because the rest of it would be easier to them. I don't know.
Maybe.
Not sure.
I
don't know. I'll email both of you extensively.
Please.
I'm excited about that.
We haven't even talked about Stone Cold Fox.
No, we haven't talked about any of your sketch work at all. You were on Mod Night, mm-hmm. right? And what mod team were you on?
I was on Stone Cold Fox.
Okay, you were not on Gramps.
I was not on Gramps. No. Also,
that's the only reason I wanted to bring all that up.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Is that it? No.
So you were on Stone Cold Fox.
Oh, no. Yeah. We are going to talk.
So you were on two house teams at the theater that were moved from their nights to weekend.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's
so
strange.
You're the lucky charm.
I'm the lucky charm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm the one that's the most threatening mm-hmm. at middle of the night.
yeah, I mean we're sort of we have a couple more minutes before we have to wrap this
up.
But what is the process like for you? Stone Cold Fox creates a new show every three months.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the process like for you being involved with that?
Sure. First of all, it's great. It sometimes feels like it's hard because you're running a show and you're trying to focus on that show and you're making that better as it's getting up, as you're trying to start this. We're like maybe halfway through our run with All Keyed Up, mm-hmm. and we literally have a meeting this evening to write our next show to begin that process. It's hard. It's not been easy, but we're really getting, I think, our groove down, mm-hmm. because we're finding that the audience on the weekend is again a little bit different than a Mod Night audience, and so it's more like solid, trying to find more solid sketches. Mm-hmm. We've tried big, gigantic, like Shannon O'Neill directed this monster of a show called Choose Your Own Adventure, which I guess did pretty well in terms of the audience, and it was a great, fun show. It was just such a daunting. We ran it for like 6 months because we were so exhausted from doing it, and now we've run our last show was 3 months. This one's going to be 3 months, and it's about just putting together as much of a solid sketch show for the hour as we possibly can, mm-hmm. with a great cast of deadly actors that are just very funny.
And are you and the actors as involved in the or involved at all in the writing process of that?
We're getting more so that way. Yeah, it's like we email out our pitches. We try to talk to the writers whenever we get the chance to. I'm fortunate enough that the writers on Fort Stone Cold Fox as much turnover over the past 4 years at least I've been on it, mm-hmm. and then the 6 years that Stone Cold Fox has been together, mm-hmm. And with Darcy leaving, she'll be the last original Stone Cold member gone.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep the legend alive. I'm so devastated. Anyway, I'm sorry, Darcy. No, oh, forget it. We can edit this out. Okay, so long and short of this, it's been really fun. And we improvise a ton in rehearsal. Mm-hmm. The writers are so supportive of the actors. The actors love the writers very much. And I'm having a blast doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's great.
Do you feel the same level of like doubt or insecurity as a sketch actor that you have as a improviser?
Huh. That's a great question. I did in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. My first Mod Night, I was a train wreck, and I positive that my shirt was soaked with sweat. It was embarrassing, and I played like a sweaty man in all four of the sketches. Now I feel confident in, I like acting. I really, really do. I love performing, and I don't have as many insecurities about that because it is written. Like, the jokes are there. It's now just about facilitating it and putting it on stage and figuring it out and having as much fun as you possibly can. And I mean, like, I don't feel as much insecurity with that. Maybe there, I mean, again, like all these things that I say, I'm sure there's many people out there that I'm not their cup of tea, but like I feel confident that at least the work is there. The work is there. We're trying.
I like
stuff.
You say you felt comfortable after a certain time. I think that's the feeling that changes.
Yeah. I think that's comfortability is not a word. Comfortableness. I think comfortableness.
Comfort.
Comfort. I think comfort is a good thing to recognize.
Sure.
When are you feeling comfortable in improv shows? Why did you feel comfortable in improv shows?
Right.
Was it because I knew what was going on? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. You guys keep smirking. Am I like insane?
No, not at all.
You're just adorable.
Yeah. You're a national treasure.
I'm out of questions.
Yeah. I think we're just about out of time here. There were a lot of written shows that you've been in that we didn't get to. Mm-hmm. Death Wears Stilettos, which is a great show.
Oh, yeah.
This Is Not a Sketch Show. You were in that. That was a great show. Waiting for Obama. We didn't talk at all about Waiting for Obama, but that's all right.
I was only in it. I'm only in the UCB comedy version of that show.
That's true.
But I did do it, yeah.
And one of the stars of Oh My God, I Heard You're Dying, which we talked a little about last week.
Oh, wow. It was a great show.
It was a great show. You were the lead. Is it safe to say you were the lead in the show?
I was like the thread throughout that show.
Was
nude from the waist down.
That's right. Yeah.
At the end of it. Mm-hmm. And I guess once you've been naked from the waist down at the end of a show, other things don't seem as bad on stage. Yeah. Things aren't going to go bad. You're like, well, they've already seen it all.
So no, being pantsless is something that figures into a lot of your comedy, both real and hypothetical. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, we should mention real quick that you're going to be in the next season of Very Mary Kate. Yes?
Yes, I am.
The web series.
Very Mary Kate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I play Very Mary Kate's boyfriend in a few episodes this year. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you.
Me too.
I am too. I get to speak a foreign language, so we'll see how it goes, hopefully.
Very quickly, I have one more question. I asked this of Morgan. I'm kind of curious to ask it to people now. What's the, like, ultimate goal for you?
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh boy. The ultimate goal for me, it's hard because I don't want to give that vague answer of like, if I'm doing what I love to do,
right,
that'll be enough.
Like,
and that's a great answer.
That's the public answer, but we all sit on the subway and stare out the window and think like, this thing is going to happen to me one day. I just know it.
Sure.
Or we fantasize about what we want. Like, what is it?
Oh my God.
What
it's
is it
so
for
hard
you?
To talk about. Okay.
The hat's off.
I know, the hat is off now. The locks are flowing on my head. I'm
closer to the microphone,
okay,
please. That's right.
I think I'm in like a really great Broadway play that a lot of people really like respect, and they're like, this will be a piece of theater that will stand the test of time.
That's pretty cool, really?
Oh my God, I want it so badly. And like, even if that's my only performance,
but people remember, Brandon's, grandkids, I saw Brandon Scott Jones.
Who? But it's worth it, you know? It's like, and that, yeah. Oh man, I think I love theater so much that I want to do theater, mm-hmm. and this is the way I like doing it. I like improvising. I like doing comedy, sketch comedy. I think there's a correlation between the two, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about it. Oh my God, I Heard You Dying so much. It was like this great play. Mm-hmm. I got to do a beefy scene with, you know, in Death Wears Stilettos, where I got to make out and like, you know, with John.
You get
Murray
to make out with John Murray. Yeah.
I had to say it because I've done it. This is going to be like the like special 4-hour podcast. I'm sorry that I.
We can edit this out later. Yeah. Is the title of your autobiography?
Yeah. Which is a great, great title.
All right. Mm. Well, I think we're done here.
Me too.
Yeah.
Thank you to our podcast intern, Sypha.
Sounds.
Sypha Sounds. Thank you to Keaton, the intern. And thank you to
Semra, the assistant.
Semra, the assistant.
To the intern.
Thank you, Brandon Scott Jones. Where can people see you next? Grandma's Ashes.
Yeah, you can see me. Grandma's Ashes, 10:30 on Saturday nights at UCB Chelsea. And then Stone Cold Frocks, Friday night, 7:30 p.m. at UCB East. Mm-hmm. I mean, UCB Chelsea. And then Gentrify, Friday nights, 10:30 p.m. at UCB East.
Oh, also, you're on Twitter, yes?
I am on Twitter.
What is your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is at Brandon S. J. BrandonSJ.
Great.
And then watch Very Mary Kate, mm-hmm. I guess. Will Hines is also in it.
That's right. I'm in that.
Mm-hmm. Always been, though.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, John.
Anything to plug?
Nope.
Me neither.
Oh, gosh.
Have a good life, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
See you next week.
Bye. Of all the pleasures of all